Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in Genesis chapter 43. I'm going to do the entire chapter, verses 1 through 34. We will entitle this session, Joseph's Brothers Return to Egypt. Our context is this. In our last chapter, chapter 42, Joseph had met his brothers in Egypt and had sent them back with their 9 sacks of grain and probably other grain also back to Joseph's father, Jacob, back in Canaan, probably at Hebron. And so they went back and they said, we've got to bring Benjamin back. Joseph insists on it. They didn't know it was Joseph, but the vizier, let's put it this way, the big shot in Egypt, he wants us to bring Benjamin back or else he's going to label us as spies and we're not going to get any more food. So that's where we are now in Genesis 43 verses 1 through 2. Now the famine was severe in the land. That's the land of Canaan. So it came about when they had finished eating the grain which they had brought from Egypt that their father said to them, go back, buy us a little food. Notice that finished eating, it was all gone and they were in a famine and they didn't have any food and they were facing starvation. So this severe famine made a second trip necessary to go back to Egypt, and that eventually forced Jacob to let Benjamin go, which he did not want to do because Benjamin was his dear son of his favorite wife, Rachel, the youngest son that he had left, as far as he knew, and he didn't want to let him go. By the way, this is a small point, but the grain they brought back, we tend to think it's in the 9 sacks that the brothers brought back. The commentator Ellicott says it was probably more than just the 9 sacks. They probably had carried a whole bunch of grain back. I don't know if he's right about that or not. 9 sacks sure doesn't sound like very much. I suspect that they had carried more. But anyway, it was all gone. We go to Genesis 43, verses 3, 4, and 5. Judah spoke to him, however, saying, I spoke to Jacob, his father, saying, the man solemnly warned us, that's Joseph he's referring to, the man solemnly warned us, you shall not see my face unless your brother is with you, your brother Benjamin. If you send our brother with us, we will go down and buy you food. But if you do not send him, we will not go down, for the man said to us, you will not see my face unless your brother is with you. So Judah, who is now the spokesman for the tribes, for the 12 patriarchs, well, it's not 12, actually, it's the brothers that are there, the 10 patriarchs, I guess we'll say. He's leading the tribes now, and later he would actually become preeminent in Israel, as the NIV Study Bible says. We read this in Jacob's blessings to his children on his deathbed in Genesis 49, 8 through 10. Judah, your brothers shall praise you, Jacob says. Your brothers shall praise you. Your hand shall be on the neck of your enemies. Your father's sons shall bow down to you. Judah is a lion's whelp. From the prey, my son, you have gone up. He couches, he lies down as a lion, and as a lion, who dares rouse him up? The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor the ruler's staff from between his feet, until Shiloh comes, that's the Messiah, and to him shall be the obedience of the peoples. And of course, we know that Judah's tribe gave birth to the Messiah, so Judah was a lion, and then the lion of Judah was Jesus. Well, all that regal rule begins right here, because Judah's taking charge. Now, why wasn't one of the other brothers the spokesman instead of Judah? Well, we already know that Reuben had been repulsed by Jacob. In the previous chapter, chapter 42, verses 37 and 38, we read this. Then Reuben said to his father, you can kill my 2 sons if I don't bring him back to you. Put him in my care, and I will return him to you, talking about Benjamin. But Jacob answered, my son will not go down with you, for his brother is dead, and he alone is left. Jacob thinks that Joseph is dead. He's not, but Jacob thinks he is. And he, Benjamin, alone is left, Jacob says. If anything happens to him on your journey, you shall bring my gray hairs down to Sheol in sorrow. So Jacob had already thoroughly repudiated Reuben when Reuben said, let's take Benjamin back down to Egypt and get some more food. Well, so Reuben's out. And of course, Reuben slept with his father Jacob's concubine, which sort of made him persona non grata, made him someone that his father is not likely going to listen to. Well, how about the second oldest son? That's Simeon. Well, he was back in Egypt as a hostage. He can't lead the family. The third oldest son is Levi. He's next oldest after Simeon. Well, he's probably out of favor because of the Shechem affair. Remember the Shechemites? Well, there was a man named Shechem who lived in Shechem who raped the brother's sister Dinah, and Simeon and Levi led a mass execution of the Shechemites by suckering them into getting circumcised to make an alliance, which never came about because when they were weak and painful and in pain because of their circumcision, Simeon and Levi went there and wiped them out. So And Jacob was extremely perturbed by this. He said, "You've made me odious in Shechem." So the first three kids are out. Well, Judah's number four, and he's in charge now. Now, Judah very firmly says, "Look, we'll go if you send Benjamin with us. But if you don't send him, we're not going to go. Because the man," that's Joseph, "said, 'You will not see my face unless your brother is with you.'" They knew it would be impossible. They knew they would probably be tried and executed as spies. They're not going to go. So it's Benjamin, or we stay here and starve to death in the famine. Now we turn to Genesis 43, verses 6 and 7. "Then Israel," that's Jacob, "said, 'Why did you treat me so badly by telling the man whether you still had another brother?' But they said, 'The man questioned particularly about us and our relatives, saying, Is your father still alive? Have you another brother?' So we answered his questions. Could we possibly know that he would say, 'Bring your brother down?'" Now the brothers were right. Having mentioned Benjamin, there's no way that they could have thought that Joseph would say, "Bring your brother down as surety." So I think they've got a point there. But there is a question about whether they were truthful with their father. If you look back at Genesis 42:13, it sounds like that they were the ones that brought up the younger brother living in Canaan, not Joseph. Genesis 42:13 says this, "But they," the brothers, "replied, 'We, your servants, were 12 brothers, the sons of one man in the land of Canaan. The youngest is now with our father, and one is no longer living.'" Well, there's the first mention of Benjamin, and it was the brothers that mentioned Benjamin, not Joseph. Well, that makes it sound like the brothers are lying to their father. However, this is what the commentator Ellicott says. He says that no, they weren't lying. This was rather just a summary statement of the cross-examination that Joseph had given them, and this is just how it was written down. But there's other stuff left out, namely that Joseph must have asked about their family back in Canaan because he wants to find out, and the brothers just brought it up because of the questioning, so it wasn't really their fault. And even if they had mentioned the brother, they had no way of knowing that Joseph would ask the brothers to bring Benjamin back to Egypt. So they were safe on that count, but they might have been fudging a little bit by saying Joseph was the one who provoked their giving the information to him about Benjamin. It's just hard to say. Let me read what Ellicott says. He says, in Genesis 42:13, that's the verse I just read, which says, "The youngest is now with our father," the brothers say. So the brothers are telling Joseph, "This is where Benjamin is. He's with our father." Ellicott says in Genesis 42:13, "They appear rather as volunteering a statement of their family relations than as having it wrung from them or cross-examination. But really, this history must be taken as explaining and supplementing the former." In other words, this history here that we just read, where the brother said, "Hey, we didn't know. We were provoked by answering Joseph's questions. We didn't volunteer this information about Benjamin." And so Ellicott takes this not as a lie by the brothers, but just as a supplemental explanation of what happened. So Ellicott says, "Really, this history must be taken as explaining and supplementing the former," Genesis 42:13, "the former. Accused of being spies, they would naturally give an account of themselves, and Joseph, anxious to know about his father and brother, would certainly put numerous questions to them concerning their home and family, and they would answer them fully and frankly, little suspecting who was the questioner and what was his real reason for exacting Benjamin's presence and proof of their trustworthiness." In other words, Ellicott says the brothers didn't lie to Jacob here, and I think we ought to give them the benefit of the doubt. Let's just assume that they didn't lie, and we know for a fact they had no way of knowing that Joseph would ask Benjamin to come down. So the brothers are saying, "Please, Father Jacob, give us a break here." And besides, going back and hashing over the past, did that advance Jacob's family's cause even one little whit? No, it did not. There was water under the bridge, but Jacob wants to feel sorry for himself and moan and groan and blame the son some more. We go to Genesis 43:8-10. Judah said to his father Israel, that's Jacob, "Send the lad with me, and we will arise and go, that we may live and not die, we as well as you and our little ones." In other words, we're dying of starvation. We need food. You need food. Our little ones need food. We've got to go. We've got to take Benjamin with us. Verse 9, Genesis 43. "I myself," Judah continues, "will be surety for him, for Benjamin. You may hold me responsible for him, responsible for Benjamin. If I do not bring Benjamin back to you and set him before you, then let me bear the blame before you forever. For if we had not delayed, surely by now we could have returned twice." Now, the NIV Study Bible says that Reuben's offer for a security was better than Judah's was. Remember, Reuben says, You can kill my two sons, your two grandsons. Judah just says, hey, you can hold me responsible. Now, the only way that's a better offer is because Reuben's offer of killing the two grandsons was so extreme that Jacob couldn't take it seriously. Why would Jacob want to kill his two grandsons? But here, Judah is saying, you can hold me responsible. That means, hey, he could lose his inheritance. Who knows? But it was much more reasonable than talking about killing two grandsons. And I think that's probably true. I think the NIV Study Bible is probably right there. Now in verse 8, Judah calls Benjamin the lad. Send the lad with me. Well, now, that sounds like a little kid, but actually Benjamin was about 32 years old, 30 to 32 years old, according to John Gill. He was 32. We do that, but we know that Joseph was, well, it can be calculated. I'm not going to go through the calculations now. We know that Benjamin was 7 years younger than Joseph, and Joseph now is about 39, 37 to 39. So at any rate, Benjamin is no lad. He's a young man. And plus, we know that he had children that went with him to Egypt. Genesis 46:21, here are the sons of Benjamin, Bela and Becher and Ashbel, Gera and Naaman, Ehi and Rosh, Muppin and Huppim and Ard. Here's a great Bible trivia question. Which two sons of Benjamin had names which rhymed? Muppin and Huppim. Well, at any rate, he was not really a lad. Adam Clark says youth would be a better translation here. We go now to Genesis 43:11-14. Then their father Israel, that's Jacob, said to them, if it must be so, then do this. Take some of the best products of the land in your bags and carry down to the man as a present a little balm and a little honey, aromatic gum and myrrh, pistachio nuts and almonds. Take double the money in your hand and take back in your hand the money that was returned in the mouth of your sacks. Perhaps it was a mistake. Take your brother also and arise, return to the man. And the man he's referring to is Joseph. He doesn't know he's Joseph, but it's Joseph. He's the number two guy in Egypt as far as Jacob is concerned. Take your brother, take Benjamin, go back to this man, and may God Almighty grant you compassion in the sight of the man so that he will release to you your other brother, that's Simeon, and Benjamin. In other words, bring him, we'll let Benjamin come back. And as for me, if I am bereaved of my children, I am bereaved. So you see, Jacob is resigned to the inevitable. He had no choice but to send Benjamin. He and his family were starving to death. What's he going to do? He hated it, but he had to let Benjamin go. If it must be so, yeah, well, it must be so. He said, take a present to this strong man in Egypt. In the East, one never approaches a man of power without a present, as John Gill says. And I'm telling you, having lived in China for 23 years, that idea in the East is still around. That's the most gift-giving people I ever saw in my life. You go out to eat with somebody, you take them a gift. Proverbs 18:16 says this, a man's gift makes room for him and brings him before great men. Yes, so Jacob's just doing the expected customary thing there. He gave a part of the present was aromatic gum, NIV says spices. And then he says in verse 12, take double the money back. In other words, return the money that your purchase money for those nine sacks, return that, and then take some more money on top of that to buy back some more grain. And then he says, maybe it was a mistake. In other words, take it back. Don't try to hide the fact that we got some extra money that doesn't belong to us. You're going to have to take the chance that they're going to think you stole it. Maybe it was just a mistake and you can show that it was a mistake, that the money got in the stack somehow. Now think about this. Jacob obviously believed his sons had not stolen the money. What other explanation was possible except that it was a mistake? Well, let's think about that further. How could it be a mistake? If the brothers packed the grain, how could they mistakenly put money in the bags? It's impossible for them to make a mistake like that. Well, it could be the brothers said, servants packed the bag, and the servants saw the money lying around and said, oh, this money must go in the bag. Well, that's far-fetched. That makes no sense, really. But poor old Jacob, he had no idea how the money got there. It's the only thing he could think of. So in verse 14, when Jacob said, well, if I'm bereaved of my children, if Simeon and Benjamin don't show back up here, or if the kids get arrested for being spies and I don't get any food coming back here, and all my kids are either enslaved, executed, well, so be it. Nothing I can do about it. I'm bereaved. That's pretty sad. Total resignation. We go down to Genesis 43, verses 15 through 18. So the men took this present, and they took double the money in their hand, and Benjamin. Then they arose and went down to Egypt and stood before Joseph. When Joseph saw Benjamin with them, he said to his house steward, bring the men into the house and slay an animal and make ready, for the men are to dine with me at noon. So the man did as Joseph said and brought the men to Joseph's house. The men here, of course, are the 10 brothers. Now the men were afraid because they were brought to Joseph's house, and they said, "It is because of the money that was returned in our sacks the first time that we're being brought in, that he may seek occasion against us and fall upon us and take us for slaves with our donkeys." Now, verse 14 says Joseph saw Benjamin with the brothers. That's the first time Joseph has seen Benjamin for 20 or 22 years. And his appearance must have been greatly altered by then because he was just a little kid when Joseph last saw him. But Joseph knew who he was because he was with the brothers. So he knew who Benjamin was. That must have been sort of a poignant moment seeing his blood brother, his full brother, the son of his mother Rachel and the son of his father Jacob. His full brother he's seen there, haven't seen him for over 20 years. Must have been an emotional moment, which of course he didn't show. Now it says the men were afraid. They thought they were going to be accused of theft. The brothers did. They normally would have stayed at a public lodging place. Adam Clark says a guilty conscience needs no accuser. Well, they were guilty about a lot of things, but they weren't guilty about stealing that money because they didn't steal it. But they were guilty for other reasons, for selling their brother into slavery, for example. Now, in verse 18, the brothers are brought to a house. Now, this is an official governor's house, Joseph's house. As Jameson Fawcett Brown says, it was a stately mansion. The brothers weren't even accustomed to a modest house, as Jameson Fawcett Brown says, because they were nomads. They lived in tents, and here they are in a big Egyptian official's house, scared to death that they're going to get accused of theft or maybe being a spy. And so they were on edge and noticed that they were worried about being taken for slaves. Shoot, they should have been worried about being executed for spies, but I guess they were not expecting the absolute worst. They were just thinking, well, we're going to end up being slaves down here, and they're going to take our donkeys. Now, isn't that interesting? They're worried about being slaves, and they're worried about their donkeys? It's strange that the brothers would worry about their donkeys right as they were about to be enslaved. Those donkeys must have been pretty important to them. I'm speculating here. Maybe this was the only way to get food back to Jacob. I'm sure it was the only way, and they're thinking, oh, we need those donkeys. But if you think about it, if the brothers were enslaved, the fate of the donkeys was immaterial. It wouldn't matter. But at any rate, the brothers were faced at losing their freedom and losing their property. Not a happy moment. Genesis 43:19 through 22. So they came near to Joseph's house steward and spoke to him at the entrance of the house and said, "Oh, my Lord, we indeed came down the first time to buy food. And it came about when we came to the lodging place, that's on the way back, that we opened our sacks, and behold, each man's money was in the mouth of his sack, and our money in full." I need to stop here. It actually was one man who opened one sack and found the money. The money in all the other eight sacks was not found until the brothers got back to Canaan, back to probably Hebron where Jacob was. So this is collapsing the story, telescoping the story a little bit. "So we have brought the money back in our hand, the brothers continue. "We have also brought down other money in our hand to buy food. We do not know who put the money in our sacks." So they're perfectly honest, telling them a very unlikely story. Yeah, money, somebody put money in your sack. So I bet what they're thinking is that when we tell them this cock and bull story, this is when we're going to get arrested. But they were being very honest. Now, as I said, only one brother's money was found in the mouth of the sack at the lodging place. But here, as they relate the story to the steward, they say each man's money was in the mouth of his sack. If we go back to Genesis 42, verses 27 to 28, we read this. "As one of them opened his sack to give his donkey fodder, he saw his money in the sack." One of them. But then in Genesis 42:35, when they got back to Canaan, when they got back to Jacob, as they were emptying their sacks, that behold, every man's bundle of money was in his sack. Every man's money was in his sack. So there's your other eight sacks. So just to keep the details of the story straight, the NIV Study Bible says the brother's statement to Joseph's steward compressed the details. That's all right. They do that all the time. Now the brothers are open and honest about everything. Now, as Adam Clark says, their troubles are starting to make them honest men. We go now to Genesis 43, verse 23. "He said," that's the steward, Joseph's steward, his servant, "said to the brothers," to the men, "Be at ease, do not be afraid. Your God and the God of your father has given you treasure in your sacks. I had your money." Then he brought Simeon out to them. Now, first of all, the steward gives God the credit. He says, "Hey," now, I'm sure the steward knew why the money was there. He was probably told to do it, but he's giving credit to God. He's saying that, "Hey, you guys got wealth. This was the providence of your God." Now, perhaps the steward is saying, "Look, God moved Joseph's heart to put the silver in the bags. It's not stated here, but it could be. At any rate, Joseph had probably told the steward what had happened. Either the steward had done it or Joseph had it done by somebody else, and then he told the steward. So the steward knew that the money had been put in the sacks as a gift, as a present. And then the steward says, I had your money. In other words, I received your money. I got your money. I know you didn't steal this money. I received payment in full, so you brothers are off the hook for theft. So the brothers could breathe a sigh of relief at that, and then another sigh of relief. Then he, the steward, brought Simeon out to them. Simeon, of course, had been bound as security and been left in jail as the brothers went back to Canaan to take grain to Jacob. So now they can breathe a sigh of relief on a second count. Their brother Simeon is now out of jail. So now we've got all 11 brothers in Joseph's house, Joseph being the 12th brother. All the patriarchs are together. And Simeon was brought out of jail, I'm sure, because Joseph had told the steward to bring him. Joseph had seen that Benjamin was there, that the brothers had done exactly what Joseph had requested. And so Joseph said, okay, steward, get Simeon out of jail and bring him to the banquet. We go down to Genesis 43, verses 24 through 28. Then the man, that's the steward, brought the men into Joseph's house, brought the 11 brothers into Joseph's house and gave them water, and they washed their feet, and he gave their donkeys fodder. So they prepared the present for Joseph's coming at noon. That's the brothers prepared the present that they had brought from Canaan for Joseph's coming at noon. For they had heard that they were to eat a meal there. When Joseph came home, they brought into the house to him the present which was in their hand and bowed to the ground before him. Then he, that's Joseph, asked them about their welfare, asked his brothers about their welfare, and said, is your old father well of whom you spoke? Is he still alive? They said, your father, your servant, our father, is well. He is still alive. They bowed down in homage. Now the steward got water for the brothers. That's typical Eastern hospitality, so they could wash their feet. The brothers are said in verse 25 to have heard that they were to eat a meal in Joseph's house. How had they heard? Options, but the steward told them. Or if the brothers had not heard what the steward told them directly, perhaps they overheard Joseph telling the steward that they were to come eat. And in verse 16, says this, when Joseph saw Benjamin with them, he said to his house steward, bring the men into the house and slay an animal and make ready, for the men are to dine with me at noon. That might be how the brothers had heard. Now in verse 26, we read that the brothers came to the house to present their present to Joseph, and then they bowed to the ground. Ah, there's that word bowed again. Joseph's dream was fulfilled again, that dream of years ago, 22 years before. But this time the bowing of the brothers down to Jesus, to Joseph, was more complete than it was before, because all 11 brothers are bowing this time. First time, Benjamin wasn't with them when they bowed. That was in Genesis 42:6, the preceding chapter. Joseph was in charge of the country. He sold grain to all its people. His brothers came and bowed down before him with their faces to the ground. So this is the second bowing down. And of course, those were the famous dreams back in Genesis 37, the dream of the sheaves bowing down to Joseph's sheaves, the 11 sheaves bowing down to the Joseph sheath, and then the sun, the moon, and the 11 stars bowing down to Joseph, those two dreams. Now, this is a minor point, but the 11 stars did bow down before Joseph. Literally, the sun and the moon did not. The sun would be Jacob. The moon would be Rachel, the mother and father. But Rachel and Jacob stood for the whole nation of Israel, because they were the patriarchs. They were the mothers of the 12 tribes. The ancestors of the 12 tribes. And so they can be said to have bowed down before Joseph. That's a minor point. At any rate, the brothers bowed down to Joseph, once again fulfilling the dream. Now Joseph asked in verse 28, is your old father alive? Now Joseph might well wonder if his father were still alive. Jacob was an old man when the brothers left Egypt the first time, and now they're back in Egypt the second time. Is he still alive? Reasonable question. The brothers responded, verse 28, your servant, our father, is well. So now the brothers are saying, Jacob, the father, is doing obeisance to Joseph. Well, there's the son bowing down to, not literally bowing down, but doing obeisance to Joseph, because he's Joseph's servant. And then once again in verse 28, the brothers bowed down in homage. They bowed down again for the third time. Once again, Joseph's dream, his two dreams actually, were fulfilled. We go now to Genesis 43, verses 29 through 31. As he, that's Joseph, lifted his eyes and saw his brother Benjamin, his mother's son, he said, is this your youngest brother of whom you spoke to me? And he said, may God be gracious to you, my son. He said to Benjamin, may God be gracious to you, my son. Joseph hurried out, for he was deeply stirred over his brother, and he sought a place to weep. And he entered his chamber and wept there. Then he washed his face and came out, and he controlled himself and said, "Serve the meal." Joseph said he saw Benjamin, his mother's son. Remember, Joseph's mother was Rachel, and Rachel also gave birth to Benjamin. Rachel only had two kids, Joseph and Benjamin. So when it said his mother's son, that meant his full brother, not his half brother. All the other brothers were his half brothers, but Benjamin was his full brother. That made Joseph especially close to Benjamin. And when he asked the brothers, "Is this your youngest brother?" Joseph knew who Benjamin was. He was just leading the brothers on. He was playing out the game, going on with the charade. So Joseph says to Benjamin, "May God be gracious to you." Now, it could be that the brothers are wondering, why is Joseph being so specially solicitous of our younger brother Benjamin? Why is the viceroy of Egypt showing special favor to Benjamin? But we have to ask ourselves, is Joseph really showing special favor? May God be gracious to you, as Adam Clark says, is, quote, "a usual salutation in the East from the aged and superiors to the younger and inferiors," which, though very emphatic and expressive in ancient times, in the present day means no more than, "I am your humble servant," or, "I am exceedingly glad to see you," words which among us mean just nothing. So in other words, this might have just been a greeting that Joseph gave, "May God be gracious to you." But perhaps not. The words are used later in other benedictions in Numbers 6:25, when Aaron was told how to bless the Israelites. This is what Aaron was told to say: "The Lord make his face shine on you and be gracious to you." Psalm 61 says this: "God be gracious to us and bless us. May God shine his grace on us." So maybe he was given a special Hebrew blessing, a special Yahweh blessing. Maybe it was more than just a formality, a courtesy. At any rate, Joseph hurried out. Now, the brothers might think, what is he leaving for? Of course, he left because he had to cry. He didn't want anybody to see him crying. The brothers probably thought he had state business to attend to. Maybe they thought he had to go to the bathroom or something. But that's, I'm sure, it was not a big question. I mean, that's not a big deal for the host to leave for a minute. Now, Joseph weeping shows that he was an emotional and sensitive man. And as a matter of fact, he wept often. Let's look at the scriptures where he wept. Genesis 42:24. "He turned away from them and wept." This is when he first met them on their first trip to Egypt. Genesis 45:2. "He wept so loudly that the Egyptians heard it." This is later than where we are now. "And the household of Pharaoh heard of it." He was crying so loud. This is when Joseph revealed his identity to his brothers. He cried again. Genesis 45:14-15. "Then he fell on his brother's Benjamin's neck and wept, and Benjamin wept on his neck. He kissed all his brothers and wept on them. And afterwards his brother talked with him." So he's crying all over the place as he's hugging his brothers in Genesis 45. And then in Genesis 46:29, "Joseph prepared his chariot and went up to Goshen to meet his father Israel," that's Jacob. "As soon as he appeared before him, he fell on his neck and wept on his neck a long time." Well, there's nothing wrong with men crying. There's plenty to cry about. These were tears of joy, though. Genesis 43, verse 32 says this: "So they served him by himself." That's the servants. Served Joseph by himself, and them, the brothers, by themselves, and the Egyptians who ate with him by themselves, because the Egyptians could not eat bread with the Hebrews, for that is loathsome to the Egyptians. Well, why was Joseph eating by himself? Well, there's a couple of options. Because Joseph was a Hebrew and he couldn't eat with the other Egyptians. I don't think that's really true, because he was a big shot Hebrew. He was a viceroy of Egypt, number two to the Pharaoh. I don't think they would separate him for that. I think the other option is better for the sake of grandeur. He's the big shot. He eats by himself. The Egyptians ate by themselves. That's the servants of Joseph, the ministers, state ministers, and household servants, whoever they were. I don't know, maybe not the household servants, but the ministers are eating a meal by themselves, but not with the brothers, because they were Hebrews. Now, so why do Egyptians not eat with Hebrews? The NIV Study Bible says the exclusion, the separation there, is probably due to religious or ritual reasons. For example, John Gill says that the problem is that the Egyptians worshiped that which the Hebrews ate. So, but John Gill says that's not definite, because it's a question whether such creatures as oxen, sheep, and goats, etc., which were eaten by the Hebrews, were so early worshiped by the Egyptians, though they were in later times. Well, I don't know Egyptian history that well, but my impression is that they were worshiping animals from the get-go, 3000 BC right on up to where we are here in 1800 or so BC. and the Hebrews were eating their Hebrew gods. I think that makes sense. The Egyptians had the same attitude towards all nations, not just the Hebrews. Herodotus said, this is a quote from John Gill, quote, Herodotus says that no Egyptian man or woman might kiss the mouth of a Greek or use a knife or spit or pot. That is, a knife a Greek has cut anything with, or a spit he had roasted meat on, or a pot he had boiled it in, and adds, Herodotus adds, nor might taste of the flesh of an ox cut with the knife of a Greek. So the Egyptians were quite exclusive. They didn't like to eat with Hebrews. They didn't like to eat with Greeks either. So this little detail shows how accurate the story is. Now, it might be another option, according to Gill, Clark, and Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown, another option as to why the Egyptians would not eat with the Hebrews is because, not because they were Hebrews, but because they were shepherds. Now, it's well known the Egyptians were averse to shepherds. They didn't like them, and the Israelites were shepherds. In fact, we read that in Genesis 46, verse 34. You shall say, quote, your servants have been keepers of livestock from my youth even until now. This is Joseph telling the brothers, saying to the Pharaoh, your servants have been keepers of livestock from our youth even until now, both we and our fathers, that you may live in the land of Goshen, for every shepherd is loathsome to the Egyptians. In other words, you got Goshen is far out from the main, from wherever the Pharaoh was in the toward the center of Egypt. Goshen is out toward the northeast of Egypt on the southwest border of Israel, and so it would be far enough out to where they could be practice their stinking profession a long way away from cultivated and civilized Egyptians. Why did the Egyptians not like shepherds? Well, political rebellions were often led by shepherds. John Gill says this, before this time, Egypt suffered much by the insurrections and rebellions of such sort of persons among themselves who set up a kingdom of kings of their own called the Hyksos. Well, these are old commentators I'm using. I think I looked up Wikipedia just to be sure, because a lot of stuff has changed as they've studied Egypt more, and it might not be that these Hyksos were shepherds. I don't know. The Hyksos got a bad name from the Egyptian chronicle Manetho, who wrote during the Greek period of Egyptian history. I think it's 3rd century B.C., and people don't believe what he said, but this is what Adam Clark said, quoting Manetho. Egypt had been almost ruined by hordes of lawless, wandering bandits under the name of Hyksos, or king shepherds, who had but a short time before this been expelled from the land of Amasis, and they had held it in subjection for 259 years, according to Manetho, committing the most wanton cruelties. Well, whether that's true or not, whether it's true or not that the reason that the Egyptians didn't like shepherds is because they started political rebellions, or maybe, as Clark says, shepherds tended to be freebooters and lawless bandits, maybe so. That's not typically the idea we have of shepherds, but for whatever reason, we know that the Egyptians didn't like shepherds and the Hebrews were shepherds. So they were not only Hebrews, they were shepherds. So that's another reason they ought not to be eaten with them. So here these Hebrew shepherds are sitting there in this fancy house, being honored with a banquet, even though they were separated out, in a land that looks down on them. And they must have thinking, what in the world is going on here? We go now to verses 33 and 34 of Genesis 43. Now they were seated before him, before Joseph. The brothers were seated before Joseph, the firstborn according to his birthright, that would be Reuben, and the youngest according to his youth, that would be Benjamin, and the men looked at one another in astonishment. He took portions to them from his own table. That's Joseph. That's an act of grace and condescension, is it not, for the big shot viceroy to carry food down to the table, the Hebrews' table? But Benjamin's portion was five times as much as any of theirs. Ooh, that's strange. So they feasted and drank freely with him. Now, the brothers looked at one another in astonishment in verse 13. Why would they be astonished? Well, for one thing, the seating arrangement. Somehow this viceroy had managed to understand who was the oldest, the next oldest, the third oldest, all the way down to the youngest, and arranged them in perfect order. How in the world did he do that? So, and then the second thing they were astonished at was, as he's bringing food from his own table, going down to the brother's table, he gave Benjamin five times as much as anybody else. Why would he do that? So while this strange stuff is going on, they're feasting and eating freely at Joseph's banquet. Now, in order to show special honor to a guest, the ordinary rule of distinction was to give a double portion of food, as Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown said. But Joseph gave five times, a quintuple portion. The NIV Study Bible and John Gill say that this reflects Joseph's special status with Benjamin. The more quantity, the more respect. Now, that could be why he was just giving respect to Benjamin, but it also could be that Joseph was trying to test the brothers to see if they would be envious of Benjamin as they had been of him. That's an interesting idea. I'm not sure. It might very well be that. Or it could be he was just happy to see Benjamin. But at any rate, the brothers ate freely, but probably not to the point of excess. They drank freely, feasted, and drank freely. And I'm sure they didn't get drunk. That would be totally stupid. All right, so we'll end this chapter at this feast. That prepares us for our next chapter, chapter 44. We'll do the entire chapter there, and we will see Joseph testing his brothers, trying to find out, have they really repented for that murderous deed of selling him into slavery? Stay tuned for our next audio to examine with me that question. I hope you enjoyed this audio. See you next time.